Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Bill Moyer. He has written several different books, but the most recent one is called Doing Democracy, the Map Model for Organizing Social Movements. And he lives in San Francisco, and we've been trying to do this interview for a long time, so I'm really happy that we're able to do it today. Bill Moyer, yes. And welcome.
Well, thanks for having me here, Sue, and I'm happy we finally did this.
Really. Well, and of course, the whole issue of democracy is always incredibly important, and in these times, in my opinion, when we have things like the Patriot Act and we're really losing a lot of our civil liberties, it's a very, very serious time in history. Some people say, well, everybody always thinks it's a serious time in history, but it seems like the weapons of destruction are particularly huge, and there's just a lot of threats, a lot of directions, and a lot of repression possibly coming up even worse than it already is, but I hope not. I don't want to energize that thought, but it's always a fine line between talking about realities and not feeding negativity, I'll say right off the bat here. So you have been doing social theory and talk. You yourself are an activist, mm-hmm. And have a lot of ideas about this model, your MAP model, which, well, maybe we'll just start out by describing that right now, so we'll mm-hmm. be on the same page here with the audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I want to start out with the title, this Doing Democracy as the MAP Model for Organizing Social Movements. And it took me a long time to realize, Sue, that actually the centerpiece of democracy is social movements. You know, I mean, it's not the voting. I mean, although voting's important, but throughout the years, for the last 200 years, that it's been people organizing on the values of the basic values of democracy here, of democracy is by, for, and of the people, and freedom, justice, and equality. And I grew up in the 40s and 50s, and I believed that we had these founding fathers, you know, in Philadelphia, where I'm from, who gave us democracy and gave us free speech and all these wonderful things. And now through these last 40 years of organizing social movements and training around different parts of the world, realizing here that every positive thing about our society was achieved by ordinary citizens getting together and doing, you know, social movements against the power holders. And one of my things that's most interesting around this for me is a freedom of speech, which you mentioned, you know, it's being threatened now, and it's being taken away. Well, it's very interesting that most people think that the 52 rich, white, powerful power holders in Philadelphia gave us the right of free speech, when they did no such thing. You know, the First Amendment, if they wanted to give the right of free speech, it would read, Congress gives every citizen the right of free speech. But it doesn't say that. It says Congress will not abridge the right of free speech. That is, they won't take it away if we had it. Well, because of the social movement and the people said they didn't want a New England at the time, they demanded all these new rights and privileges, which were now the amendments. But the founding fathers did not want to grant this, but they wanted to appear like they're giving it. And we're still seeing the same thing today. So they said, we won't take it away if you have it. Well, the power holders knew, our founding fathers, that every new state and every city had very strong laws against free speech. So that's why with the Wobblies, you know, last century, they would just speak on street corners and get arrested because we didn't have that right. Or the suffragettes, in their meetings, if they mentioned abortion or contraception, the police closed in and arrested people, etc., because we didn't have that right. And so it's just from people's movements, and it was the Wobblies in 1928 on a street corner in Jersey City, New Jersey, got arrested for just speaking, and they took it up to the Supreme Court, and in 1932, the Supreme Court finally ruled in their favor, and we have the right of free speech. And so the power holders never meant for us to have it to begin with, and every time there's a war or a crisis, they try to cut it down or take it away. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that I find discourage activists as I travel around, is that we sort of like think we had all these things and they were given to us and we're losing all these things. And that's not the case whatsoever. And I see a lot of progress with, civil rights and environmental protection, social movements. And it's going in the other direction too. So this democracy is not something that we have. It's something that we do, and it's not something that was given to us. It's something that people have to keep recreating, and we're in a process.
I like that bumper sticker that says something about the labor movement, the folks that brought you the 8-hour week. That's a real jog to the mind to remember. I mean, that's a good example of something that people take for granted, and I've realized that myself in having some discussions with people that think, they're not the movement types, they're not the, they don't do that, that you can't really accomplish anything that much. But in fact, I agree that when I think about it, that's how things have been accomplished. And of course, I don't want to make this show about the media, but we're on the media, but now it's so sophisticated the way our people's minds get manipulated, and especially all this war stuff, as you alluded to, mm-hmm. Bill Moyer. So what to do? And explain the model. Oh. And I must say that by looking at the model, it did make me feel a little bit better to see that we're in, where I fall in my own mind on the scale of how things are happening, because feeling so discouraged these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is called MAP, the Movement Action Plan, and I've created this over the decades from seeing that from so many social movements I was in, from the civil rights movement and actually before that, anti-atmospheric nuclear testing and the anti-Vietnam War, that these social movements went through stages and that there were different roles that needed to be played. And I found that a lot of the social movements I was originally in, we were excited doing demonstrations, and then we'd become depressed because nothing would happen. And then we'd be depressed and sad and nothing's happening, and then we would win on the issue. And so then people would be happy. You know, like the last 4 years or 3 years of the anti-Vietnam War movement, we all thought, everyone in the movement was kind of pretty depressed, working on it for 10 years, nothing happened, and then suddenly the war ended, and everyone said, what a powerful social movement. So by looking at the stages that the social movement goes through, then we can see the progress as we move along, and we can strategize for each of the stages, for the particular stage we're in, and so we can see the progress as we go, and not be depressed all the way up until we win. So that's part of the thinking of it. Well, first is the four roles of a model, as a part of MAP. And I realized that all social movements, to be successful, need four roles to be played. A citizen, we need to be full citizens and place ourselves in the center of society, not on the fringe. And when I worked with on Dr. King's staff, he always said we're here to fulfill the American dream, not to condemn it. And it's not enough to be promoting the widely held values of democracy and freedom, but we need to be rebels, the second role, to protest when those values are being violated. And it's not enough just to be rebels and to protest, though that's really important. A third role is what I call the change agent. We have to then not only protest against but we ourselves, but we have to educate and involve the majority of ordinary citizens. And so that's the grassroots work, you know, which is a totally different personality. And even if we win over a majority of the public opinion on this issue, that we then need a fourth role. We need to convert that majority opinion into new laws and new rules, and that's the reformer role. So it's citizen, rebel, change agent, and reformer. And often the rebels and the reformers don't like each other, you know, for various reasons. And also that there's effective and ineffective ways of playing each one of these roles. And so, I spell out these roles and the effective and ineffective. You have a question?
Oh, well, I just wanted to say that this expression that freedom is a constant struggle is really kind of sums it up, too. And I'd just like to ask you, Bill Moyer, right there, about what is, if you just say a little bit about what is a more effective way to play these roles, if you can. There's so much to talk about here.
The rebel role is a really important role, and it's one of my favorite over the years. You're signaling the same. As rebel, when we are out in the streets, and we need to say no, but we need to be, our target is not the corporation or the government. Who we're really talking to and trying to win over is the general public. And so let's not, you know, fight with the police and, you know, so, which is what I call the ineffective rebel or the negative rebel. With the negative rebel, it's like the authoritarian, anti-authoritarian, or we have absolute truth, and people won't listen to us. And then when this ineffective rebel, we fight with the police or do property damage. And that turns off the public we need to reach.
Although I just got to interrupt you and say that oftentimes those are agents provocateurs, which I'm sure you know, and they get so played up by the media, which I'm sure you know. But just for the listening audience here who may or may not know that, I think there's almost no real sincere activists who do act that way, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But your point is still your point.
Yeah. Well, that was the what I was just going to say next is, and there are a lot of, I have six kinds of negative rebels listed in the book. And, of course, agent provocateur is one, an important one, because they've showed up at almost every social movement.
Maybe we should say what it is, actually, because, a non-activist listener might not know what we're talking about.
Yeah, and, well, this is where the police or the corporation actually hires some people to make believe they're demonstrators or protesters or in the movement, and at demonstrations they fight with the police, and they do that. They play the role of the negative rebel in the movement to discredit the movement in the eyes of the general public. And they know that that's what the real struggle in a social movement is, the struggle between the power holders and the citizens to win over the hearts and minds of the public. And violence in demonstrations and hostility turns the public off. So that's why they... power holders pay people to play this role. Maybe Shall we go on to this other?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Otherwise, we're going to run out of time. But I know there's so much to talk about. Bill Moyer, author of Doing Democracy, The Map Model for Organizing Social Movements.
Yeah, and it just came out in the last 2 months, and it's published by New Society Publishers, which is a wonderful publisher to work with. But the other model of MAP is these eight stages of the road to success for social movements. And I usually present this in a couple of hours, but we have a couple of minutes. But maybe I'll just say these eight titles. But the first is a critical problem exists, but only a few people know about it. You know, and there, if you call a mass demonstration, five people will show up, you know, your mother and best friend, etc. And then how to move to be a successful, powerful social movement, you have to do the second step, and that is you have to prove the failure of the official institutions, because people who are supposed to take care of the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, or the Civil Rights Commission, you know, so there's always some government institutions supposedly taking care of us, and they're not. And so we need to address those and challenge them and document that those official institutions aren't serving the people.
Could even be Congress.
Well, yes, that's a good example. And local government. And then the third step or third stage is ripening conditions. During this time, like, more people find out about this problem, and little local groups grow up around the country, but they don't know each other, and maybe the problem gets worse, the victims get worse, or more consciousness, and it blows up like a balloon, just ready to leap out, and it's still not an issue in the newspapers, etc. But it's ripening conditions time, and then stage four, a trigger event happens. Some event launches this problem, makes it a public issue. Like the classic trigger event was Rosa Parks refusing to move to the back of the bus. Boom, you know, and then launched the social movement in Montgomery. Or more recently, the big demonstration in Seattle at the end of 1999 against the corporate globalization, control of globalization. So that was a trigger event, and it launches this takeoff stage four of a social movement. And this is where you have the big demonstrations and lots of excitement, and this is the rebel stage, you know. And this is where activists actually now have a platform to talk to the public, because it puts a public spotlight on the issue and on activists ourselves. But the takeoffs, many people think that this stage four is a social movement. You know, a social movement is stage four. You know, and sociologists often teach that a social movement up that stage four. But no, there's actually four more stages. In stage four, as we have all these demonstrations, everything, over time we win a majority of the public opinion, even 50% or 45%, and the movement shifts gears, and the numbers at the big demonstrations drop way down, and they drop way down if the movement fades away, but they also drop down if the movement successfully goes to the majority stage. And in the majority stage, it's where you have all these grassroots groups start picking up this. You have local demonstrations, and people don't want to go to Washington or, you know, to the big demonstration. They're all busy doing their own actions. And it's the change agent role stage, where we're actually out here leafleting and having public meetings. And so it's a different personality in this majority public opinion stage. We also need to come up with what are the alternatives with people. A number of rebels in this stage four think that the movement's going to win by bigger and bigger demonstrations. And when they don't, and the movement succeeds in going to stage six, the majority stage, many of us rebels think the movement died and go into often to a corner of this stage five perception of failure and get angry and drop out, et cetera, because they get depressed that we failed because we think the movement is this stage four. Mm-hmm. So stage six, winning over a majority of people, and then there's once you get a majority of people over time, the movement moves to stage seven. It's actually a period, a process of success. So there's three ways, end games, et cetera, of this success. But it's where many of the power holders actually split off, or we can bring up new candidates if do it by the voting method. And even when you win on your issue, like the Vietnam War or globalization, whatever the voting the right of abortion rights for women, that what happens after that success, there's still the last stage continuation, because a big backlash usually happens. Or the government can pass a law and say, okay, we're going to do this, but they don't fund it or they don't follow through. And so you need this continuation stage after a success. And social movements are made up of many issues. And so each of those issues has a sub-movement, and so one part of your movement might be in stage two, so you do stage two things, and another part of your social movement might be in stage six, so then you have a stage six strategy and actions.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said earlier, Bill Moyer, I guess one of the advantages of having this overview that you're talking about social movements, is not to get too discouraged, because I certainly... Personally speaking, I've been involved in a lot of social movements, and mm-hmm. still am, and have seen them make a difference. It's never quite as much as you want it, as I would want it to make, and it's a process. It's just a constant process, and it's not like you come to some plateau and then it stops and everybody lives happily ever after. Life is just not like that. But when it stops the total discouragement, helps not get so discouraged. And I know we're at a time right now, I think, that I've actually read some articles and heard people talking, you know, well, what happened to all these big people in the streets when the bombing of Afghanistan started, and after 9/11 asking for that not to happen, not to be bombing. And I really like what you say about we are defending basic American values, because I grew up in the Midwest in a very kind of right-wing white community. I say the heartland of right-wing America. And I learned these values, these American quote-unquote values, as a child. And as far as I'm concerned, I've been absolutely true to them, even though my politics are kind of on a left fringe, but we need to be there. And so it's always very frustrating to me that people don't get it. Like, it's not okay to bomb, period. It's not okay to kill people. That's kind of kill innocent people. That's just a basic thing. How much do you have to know? Anyway, I'm going to stop talking so much and ask you to comment on where we are now in terms of this present situation.
Yeah. Well, that's a big question in the last couple of minutes. But I, in working against the Vietnam War, that for the first 4 years, 63 to 1967, in the spring, that it was like now, you know, all the press coverage was positive. There was a lot of, you know, the great majority of the people supported the war, but that was for 4 years. And when Dr. King came out against the war on April 4th, 1967, in the spring, all the money being sent, or much of it, to SCLC was coming from Dr. King's organization, where small donations coming from a large number of white, middle-class, northern liberals. And they stopped sending the money. They were really angry at Dr. King for opposing the Vietnam War. And that spring, we had something called the Spring Mobilization, and suddenly we had all these big marches. We had the takeoff stage of the anti-Vietnam War movement that spring. And the next year, 1 year to the day, Dr. King was assassinated on April 4th, 1968. And with that, all this money and all these letters came into the SCLC office in Atlanta, sending the money back and apologizing and say Dr. King was, you know, right, and we, you know, and so there was a gigantic switch in a year. And so those next 3 years was the takeoff stage, and we had a majority stage of the movement. And it wasn't till much later, 1975, March, that the war finally ended. So there was a 10-year period there. And I think here with this war on terrorism, if we're in a at the beginning stage, I think this is going to happen much, much more quickly, this change, because of all the communications and the internet. But the last thing I want to say about the war on terrorism is that it's a replacement for the Cold War. That the Cold War, the war on communism, was a justification for the United States to support these dictatorships all over the third world, as so that we could take the resources for this high rate of consumption and production here. And then when they lost the Cold War, they didn't have that as an excuse. Now the war on terrorism will be used to intervene, to support dictators and military and air wars all over these third world poor countries to get the oil, the gas, and all the other resources that's needed for this high production and consumption that we have here.
Well, Bill Moyer, I come back to the media again, even though I said I was going to make not make this about the media, because, again, people are so manipulated. There's so many – it's like critical thinking has gone down the drain. I don't know if it ever existed, really, but on a large scale. But, like, I just heard something on a radio station that I would not have expected to hear it on about how awful it was. Bin Laden wasn't remorseful. I mean, yeah, that'd be nice, but do we see our leaders be remorseful? I mean, we just killed thousands and thousands of innocent civilians in Afghanistan. And so what about the media? Now you really have a short time.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the media's role, as and always has been the role, to portray social activism as the negative rebel, to discredit it to the public. And in 1774, the Stamp Act was passed, you know, to prevent, to tax shipments out to England from. And there was a demonstration in New York City to the British representative's house. And the next day, the headline of the newspaper, which I saw a copy of in a university in Philadelphia, and it said, "Sailors and children march against the Stamp Act." And that was the worst thing you could call people back in 1774 was sailors and children. Mm-hmm. And so I was just surprised to see, hey, you know, we've had that for 200 years.
Right. Well, thank you very much for your time and for writing this book, Bill Moyer. The name of the book is Doing Democracy, the Map Model for Organizing Social Movements. And can one find it in bookstores, or how does it get ordered? It's New Society Publishers.
And, yes, it's at your local independent bookstores. I can be reached also through my email, bmoyer@igc.org.
Okay, that's bmoyer, M-O-Y-E-R, at igc.org. .org. Okay, well, thank you so much. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.